also joined by a legend, a superstar. Overused phrases and words, not in the case of our big guest this morning, the man, the legend. His first album was 35 years old ago this week. It's back in the charts. We're only talking Adam Ant. You lucky people. On the way, Adam Ant himself. Now, I kind of grew up in the 1970s. The 60s were my school years. The 1970s, the early teenage years, and it was an amazing decade, an explosion of ambition and artistic creativity and talent. If you move through the decade, you've got progressive rock, of course. You've got glam rock. You've got punk rock. You've got new wave. But there's one artist who I think is impossible to classify. He seemed to kind of burst onto the scene. I saw him live many times back in the early days. Was he art rock? Was he pop? Was he punk rock? Was he new wave? No, none of those things, and all of them. He was fantastic. Here are just some of his amazing hits. Two hit singles, three number ones at least, five singles in the charts at the same time in this country, more than the Beatles, and he's a Q Icon Award winner, and his album, Kings of the Wild Rock Frontier, won a Brit Award back in 1981, but unbelievably to me, his first hugely influential classic album, Dirk Wears White Socks, is 35 years old this year, and it's been reissued, remastered by Adam himself. You can get it on Deluxe White Vinyl. It's fantastic, and the man himself joins us now. Good morning, Adam Ant.
Morning, Paul. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I hope you like that build-up.
Yeah, can't be bad, can it? Crikey.
Now, I've mentioned the album, and it was an independent chart number one, an amazing album, and you're going to be performing it in its entirety in London at the Islington Assembly Hall later this month. What's the thinking behind that, Adam?
Yeah, well, it was a strange thing that came up. I was speaking to my goddaughter, Tilly, and I was speaking to her dad one morning, on the off chance, and he said, well, you know, what's Tilly doing? He said, well, she's having a vinyl party tonight at school. She's 16, Tilly. And I said, oh, yeah, what are they playing? She said, they're having a Dirk Wears White Socks evening.
Wow.
And it kind of rang true, because I've been thinking about doing an album in its entirety, but I didn't want it to be the kind of normal thing that you normally do when there's nothing going on. And I just thought, you know, this is serendipity, I'm going to do this. And it sort of came out of that, and I'd never played it live in its entirety. So I gave it a go at the Hammersmith Apollo in April.
So it's on the 21st, the 20th and the 22nd in November at the Islington Hall, and the tickets are available now, of course. When you look back, I mean, you've had an amazing career, hugely successful. I think Neil Tennant of the Pet Shop Boys once said that when a pop or rock star really hits, they go through almost an imperial phase. So there's pressure on you, singles all the time, amazing records coming out of you, you're touring, you're doing interviews, you're getting involved in the film world. Did you get any time to yourself during those frantic, hectic, heady days of the early 80s?
Not really, no. I set myself quite a sort of stern sort of task, because I think that came out of, we started in 77 in the punk rock craze, and we're sort of on the outside of everything, and we were just not particularly liked other than by the following. And so when the opportunity came after one show on Top of the Pops, I just thought, right, I'm not going to waste this, because when you get told no for 3 years solidly and then suddenly you get a big yes, you do it, and I kind of overworked. I just for 5 years, I didn't stop. I had 11 days off in 5 years, and it was just crazy that, you know, I did it.
11 days off in five years?
Yeah.
What the heck did you do on those days off? Just sleep, I suppose?
Sort of just the sort of things that I I'd normally take a walk in the park or just go to a complete day off. I'd tend to go to a gallery or something. But really, it was very intense. Every single day was doing a day off. It wasn't really a day off. There'd always be a phone or some kind of interview or something, or even thinking about work. So I just really didn't switch off. It was just it's my nature, really, I suppose.
I think one of the problems back in the early days with perception about you and the band was people kind of thought you were an overnight sensation when you turned up. And for me, it was one of those magical moments. I mean, I remember obviously seeing Bowie doing Starman, which people talk about. But I think it was October 1980. You did Dog Eat Dog, and it kind of changed everything. And people thought you'd emerge from nowhere, but in fact, you've been gigging with other bands since what, 75? You paid your dues.
Yeah, it was really starting at the ICA in 1977. I told them we were a country and western band, and turned up all in leather, and we got sort of kicked out after about 3 minutes doing Beat My Guest, and just kept working literally wherever we could work. I did a single with Decca, who kind of did Young Prisons, and because there were no punk bands left. We were the last ones left to sign, and then they dropped us. So we just had to go out touring, and it was literally playing anytime, anywhere we could, and we played everywhere we could in Great Britain, but also we had more of a response in places like, Belgium, Holland, Welsh, Germany, Italy. We were going to Europe. They really sort of liked us a lot too. But it was ironic, by the time I signed with Sony in 1980, we were selling out the Lyceum. We were selling out 2,000-3,000 seaters, just on that following.
And I know you've still got an amazingly loyal following who are going to be at the gigs at the Islington Assembly Hall at the end of this month. I know they'll be along there for that, because it's that weird thing, is that the people sometimes, and you were a pop phenomenon as well as a rock star and a great writer, but often with pop, it kind of explodes and people disappear and they go on to do other things. It seems to me that the music's always been at the heart of what you do, although the album that came out last year, which is an astonishing album, Adamant, is the Blue Black Hussar in Marrying the Gunner's Daughter, kind of almost Napoleonic feel to the album. And that was your first in, what, 18 years?
Yeah, it was 18 years. Yeah, I was sort of, becoming a father and living in deepest Tennessee on the top of a mountain. I really enjoyed the acting that I did. It was a very enriching process, and I did an acting class in Los Angeles, which really changed my kind of approach to the work. It was a very disciplined class, and I really enjoyed it, but I did miss music at the end of it. However good the movie is or the TV show you do in the States, and the actors you work with who are excellent, you still got that feeling, is this really the buzz? Is this really the best I can do?
It's collaborative, isn't it, film
it
and
is,
acting?
Yeah.
And
you
worked alongside some amazing people, Bruce Dern, I think Sharon Stone, even one of my favourites, Harry Dean Stanton, Mr. Paris,
yeah.
Texas.
Yeah, I was very lucky to work with people, director-wise, John Frankenheimer, the wonderful, director of Birdman of Alcatraz, a Manchurian Candidate, and Wayne Wang. I did Slam Dance with Tom Hulce. These actors I really learned a lot, but I started with a Joe Alton play at the Royal Exchange Theatre with the wonderful Sylvia Sims.
Of course you did Entertaining Mr. Sloan.
And I sort of went in the deep end with that, and I was lucky to work with such seasoned and generous actors like that. And then the next job was with Equalizer, with Edward Woodward.
Yep.
And they were just so generous, and I didn't have a clue what was going on. I just instinctively got through it. But it wasn't till I went to LA and studied with a guy called Harry Mastro George, and I remember my first night in class, I had to do a reading with Ray Liotta, who was in the class, and I just thought, I'm going to give up. Because, you suddenly realise...
That's like going to your local tennis court, yeah, and seeing Pat Cash or somebody opposite you, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a challenge, but but I was in there for 4 years. I'd go, we'd go every week, and it was a sort of eight-hour class, and you'd sit in there, and it was really, taught me to focus on the work and the approach. Doing a movie, there's a... Like you say, it's very collaborative on stage, obviously, with your band, but you're like a body, head and arms
sure.
But with acting, you really have to care about everybody else and really maintain that focus, and they shoot it not in the order of the story, obviously. So all the time, actors have to have this discipline, and they can literally switch on under any circumstances. And anything can happen, really. I mean, I did a movie with Bruce Dern in the middle of the desert, and I thought, this would be good, nice and hot. Great, I won't take many warm clothes with me, and then come sunset, it went absolutely sub-zero. And
you've obviously never seen Lawrence of Arabia when they're freezing.
No. But, you know, what does rock singers know about that? But it was one of those. But I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. But it, as I say, coming back to music after 17 years and then making an album, and I really never really wanted to get involved in owning a record label, but it was something that I felt, you know, I'm now at a point where I know enough about it to try. So
sure.
I formed Blue Black Hussar Records, and I'm just finishing up the second album. So it's been good.
Well, that's out next year. It's called Bravest of the Brave. And that's your new single, The Rocker, with R-O-K-K-A, is out early 2015. Yeah. I mentioned that Dirt Wears White Socks is out as an album reissued, Deluxe White Vinyl. Mm. The gig's on the 20th, 21st and 22nd of November. Now, you've been very frank in the past, Adam, about some of the troubles you've had. How's your health at the moment? How's your mental health?
Well, as good as it can be, really. I think I'm very lucky because I have a passion in life that means more to me than money and means more to me than anything. It's always been music. I've been doing music since I was, 16 years old. My first band was, I was 16, and that's always been my joy. But I think that even I had no idea of, how, exhaustion and taking on that kind of pressure. There's no school for, success. It comes along. It was so sudden, and one minute you're scraping to get like 20p for the bus, and then the next day, literally, people in Sainsbury's are chasing you down the street, and you're worth £1,000 a minute, and you can't really get your head round it. And I kind of thought, no, it's okay, I'm fine, I'm a robot. Doesn't affect me, I'm the Terminator, doesn't bother, but it did. And just, I think, a combination of that, and then really not pacing it, not taking any time off.
Which you said, 11 days off in 5 years, and of course, added to that, and I've had my own issues kind of in this area, not at, obviously with the hugely success that you have, but going through that in public must make it even more difficult.
Yeah, it was a very bad period in my life where I didn't, I was, going to my GP, and he was as helpful as he could be, and then you get put on certain medications, some of which are good, some of which aren't so good, and pretty much it was a bit of a crapshoot finding the one that would help me. And I get a lot of letters, daily, from kids writing to me, young kids. I had one yesterday from a 17-year-old girl in Manchester. Going through depression, not really understanding depression, and just feeling guilty, just feeling sad and down and broken, not knowing what to do. And I wrote a letter back with any advice I could, Mind and the Black Dog Organisation, which I'm involved in. But there's a great taboo around it. There's a great deal of shame involved with it, and really, there should not be. And I think it's hardly surprising, certainly. I've got a 16-year-old daughter. The kind of work that she has to do at school and the pressures on her right now, it's more so for young people now. And I think there needs to be funding to look into research into mental health. It's all about research. It's looking into the brain and trying to find out ways of, dealing with this. And it's a very complicated muscle in the brain, The brain is very complicated.
Adam, we appreciate your time and your frankness, and thank you for the fantastic songs you've given us and experiences over the years. Once again, Dirk Wears White Socks is out, reissued, remastered by Adam himself on Deluxe White Vinyl. If you were there back in the day, 1979, you're going to want that. And you can get tickets for that live Islington Assembly Hall series of gigs at the end of this month via Ticketmaster. Adam Ant on BBC Radio Berkshire. Time for travel.
BBC Radio Berkshire.